Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Are you looking for more customers for your business? Are you facing new competitors, not just across town, but across the country? How about across borders? How about worldwide? Welcome to Global Reach with your host, Tay Revez. As new technology makes it easier to connect with your customers, it also makes it easier for international competitors to reach them. Our program will help you stay competitive in a tough marketplace. Now, here's your host, Tay Revez.
Hi, and welcome to the first broadcast of Global Reach. We've got a new show on the Voice America Business Channel that's devoted to helping you compete in the global marketplace. Today's episode turns a spotlight on emerging and growing markets of Latin America. And to help us understand these attractive but intensely competitive markets is our guest, John Price, founder and managing director of America's Market Intelligence. For more than two decades, John has served as strategic advisor to a wide variety of companies doing business in Latin America. He provides advice on market entry, on strategy, he gives them competitive intelligence, and he provides business risk analysis. John is a recognized thought leader in the areas of Latin American business climate, and business strategy best practices, and all around, he's about the best Latin American expert I know. Before we start talking about Latin America, since John and I have worked together for over 15 years, we're going to turn the tables, and he's going to interview me about the show for a couple of minutes. John?
Well, Tay, first of all, congratulations on the launch of the show. I know you've been looking forward to this moment for a while. Tell me and tell everyone else, why Global Reach?
Well, new customers are the lifeblood of any growing company. And in a world economy that's increasingly global, what could be more natural than to reach across a border and seek those new customers in markets that are growing overseas, especially now when growth at home has slowed so badly? And even if a company never crosses a border, globalization means that every business sooner or later faces competitors from abroad right at their doorstep. And so you need to understand them. So we put together Global Reach as a show to help companies succeed in multiple countries, multiple languages, and the challenges of multiple cultures.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So what can we as listeners expect?
Well, we're going to be interviewing experts like you who will talk about how to operate in those different markets, how to cope with a wide variety of market risk, different market structures, and different governments, because, as we know, governments are business-friendly, business-hostile. They set up a whole wide variety of regulations, and companies really have to know about that if they're going to succeed when they go into a market, whether they're investing or exporting. So our guests are going to help listeners understand customer expectations across the different cultures. They'll look at how local tastes, attitudes, even religions will affect the way they need to do business. Episodes of Global Reach will look at how listeners can identify opportunities, how they can evaluate those opportunities, and at those real all-important risk factors that they need to know about in the different markets, political risk, financial risk, currency risk, regulatory risk. Finally, each episode is going to offer tools and tips, best practices that can help listeners identify the critical issues, cope with the risks, and take advantage of the opportunities, in short, compete. So we'll try and help them turn that knowledge into effective decision-making. In short, this is a show that will help our listeners think globally and succeed locally. Now let's turn to Latin America and other emerging markets. John, over the last 20, 30 years, Latin America's been hot. Latin America's been cold. It's been attractive and then companies wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. Why is it so attractive now?
Sure, great question. Well, a little history to put things in context. You know, back in the 80s, they referred to the 80s in Latin America as the lost decade. And back then, the whole region was heavily indebted and really forced to make some tough decisions, many of the similar tough decisions that Europe and the United States are having to make now. And that meant dismantling a lot of wasteful government expenditure. It meant opening up themselves, forcing themselves to compete, whether it was allowing foreign goods into their market, whether it was allowing foreign investment into their key strategic industries, or just dismantling some of the government ownership of their productive economies. Those reforms in the 90s really set some interesting wheels in motion. And part of what was interesting about it was that particularly the key ministries, like the ministries of finance, central bank, those who really define government spending and fiscal policy, increasingly were staffed by people who had gone to study at great schools around the world and worked for organizations like the IMF and World Bank, and really brought back a new world of practices to governance in Latin America. And as a result, over about the last 15 years, we've seen things like a gradual buildup of foreign reserves. We've seen paying down of foreign debt, which has allowed interest rates to drop. We see a lot more stability in the way these governments are run fiscally and monetarily. And that has provided a lot more confidence to investors who, particularly in capital-intensive industries like mining, agriculture, industrial production, that really need an outlook of 10 to 15 years to make sense for their investments. And we've seen investment rise heavily and a lot more stability reach the region. There are still countries that are troublesome and that keep investors up at night. But by and large, I would say about 80 to 90% of the region's economy is run by pretty competent governments today.
It's a real change. Let me ask you, so many companies are focused on China. Why should they go to Latin America instead?
Well, two reasons, really. First of all is competition. I'll give you an example. General Motors makes all kinds of money in Latin America, where there is not one, in all of 21 Latin American countries, there's not one country that produces its own brand of car manufacturer. So all the cars sold in Latin America are essentially designed by European, American, and Asian brands. By comparison, in China, there's over 50 Chinese car companies, native Chinese car companies. So the level of competition is a lot fiercer in China than it is in Latin America for most foreign products. And the other is consumption. As impressive as China's economy is and has been, the consumption in that country is still repressed by what are essentially different policies of forced savings and a undervalued currency. By comparison, consumption is unfettered in Latin America. And just to sort of put it in plain terms, there a lot of international marketers consider a household income of above $15,000 to be a threshold at which they begin to buy international brands. There are more $15,000 households in both Mexico and Brazil than there are in all of China.
Wow.
When you look at luxury brands, there are four times more or five times more $75,000 income households in Latin America than they are in all of China.
That's really impressive. Tell me something. Do companies that are going into Latin America to manufacture face the same kind of pressure to produce locally and to transfer technology that companies going into China do?
Generally, they have not, although it is worth noting that in the last few years, after really about a 7 or 8 year boom of high commodity prices, local manufacturers in Latin America, particularly Brazil, Argentina, but also to some degree Colombia, Chile, and others, are facing tougher and tougher competition. And they are lobbying, particularly in Brazil and Argentina, for more and more protections. And in Argentina, you have the most sort of egregious examples of this kind of national made in Argentina policies whereby manufacturers are forced to do some form of assembly in Argentina to sell products there. But by and large, across the region, these are still relatively very open markets compared to China.
Are the Latin American economies insulated from slow growth in the U.S. and Europe? I mean, one of the reasons companies are looking overseas now is that the U.S. market is growing at a really slow pace and Europe isn't growing at all.
Yeah, there are two sort of external markets that really determine Latin American growth. One is China, which is largely responsible for our elevated commodity prices. And it is China, therefore, that has a huge impact on South American countries, which tend to be commodity-rich exporters. In Central America, Mexico, and the Caribbean, they're much more reliant upon the U.S., both as a export market for their manufactured goods, so textiles from Central America, electronics from Mexico, tourism going into the Caribbean, and remittances from foreign workers working in the United States, sending money back home to Central America and the Caribbean. The U.S. economy is really what determines. So Europe has a far lesser influence on the demand for Latin American products. Now, that said, Latin America is very reliant upon imported capital in the form of government-to-government loans, in the form of banks lending money to these countries. They are chronically underfunded because so much of their savings is kept abroad. And so a European debt crisis raises the cost of capital for everybody, including emerging markets, and there's where you see the impact.
That's certainly financial risk. So when we talk about, but we're also talking about political risk. What does that include?
Well, political risk to most people is about what's going to happen in the next election or which rules are going to pass. But political risk in an environment where, number one, politicians don't always play by the rules of law, and number two, the legal environment itself is in question, then political risk is a much broader topic. For instance, if you're a foreign company competing to bid on an infrastructure project in northern Brazil, and what appears to be a fairly straightforward set of bidding instructions goes out, you may find that you're the most competitive provider, but you may not win that bid because of cronyism between the people issuing the bid, i.e. perhaps the local government, state government, and a company that has a relationship already established. And that's the kind of political risk that people really, that you're not going to read about in a headline, that you're not going to find out about, even exploring the sort of federal government level, cabinet level type of intelligence. You really have to understand the relationships between your competitors and the political players involved.
Jim, we're going to go to break in a minute, but tell me, most U.S. business people form their idea of international business risk from reading U.S. papers like the Wall Street Journal or television sources like CNBC. How accurate are these news sources when it comes to emerging market risk?
They're usually accurate, but they're terribly limited. First of all, to appeal to a broad audience, particularly in television, but also in print, you have to keep it broad and shallow. But if you're an investor facing a very specific set of risks around your business, the location of your investment, the industry you're going to be in, and the competitors you're going to be dealing with, you have to dig a lot deeper to find out what the true risk profile of your investment is.
John, I think we've got to go to break now. When we get back, can you give our listeners an idea of some of the better sources they could turn to when they want to understand emerging market risk?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
No family can survive on two incomes anymore, let alone one. If you are supplementing your family's income working from home, then tune into The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio. Host Deb Bixler brings you sales tips, lead generation systems, and best business practices that guarantee direct sales success. Whether you're looking for a little extra cash or a career change, The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio will give you proven systems that will work in your home business. The Cash Flow Show. Every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
We were talking about the best ways to understand emerging market risk right before the break. So welcome back, everybody. And now, John, what are the best ways that a company that wants to invest in Latin America and other emerging markets or even export to Latin America, what's the best way they can understand emerging market risk?
Well, it's really a two-step process. First of all, Latin America is not a country. It's a region of 21 countries. And so there are obvious starting points like Mexico and Brazil, which together represent 75% of the region's GDP. But oftentimes, they're not the most hospitable climates because everybody else is looking at those same two markets. And oftentimes, it behooves you to look beyond the two big markets at the next tier, which is countries like Chile, Colombia, Peru, Venezuela, Argentina. And so the first thing we recommend people do is benchmark particularly competitive issues, so the level of competitions, the hurdles to entry, because generally you're going to find a strong enough demand in all these markets. It's more of a question of which markets am I going to face the stiffest competition, in which markets can I realistically compete. Once you figure that out, then you want to focus. And here's the key, because entering a market like Colombia or Venezuela is going to take a lot more time and resources than entering a market like France or the United States. The market entry hurdles are higher, but the competitive landscape is less than you'll find in those more mature markets. So you really have to take your time and focus. And the other thing is to find great partners. Great partners will keep your costs down in terms of servicing that market, and great partners know how to navigate all of the tricks and turns in these countries. And so for a lot of companies, they succeed in Latin America by partnering either with distributors who move their product or even joint venture investors who help them navigate the regulatory landscape.
So the traditional risks in Latin America have lessened. But as you're pointing out, companies are not really home free. There's a substantial degree of business risk. You talked about cronyism. Can you talk more about what local what foreign companies are going to face in terms of local competitors entrenched? You know, how strong are companies in some of the major Latin American markets? And what are some of the tricks they have to maintain their advantage?
Sure. You know, it really varies by country and particularly by industry. Some industries tend to lend themselves to very strong consolidated local players. For example, beer markets. In the beer market, in the beer industry, there's usually one or two companies that really are dominant players in that country. And the idea of you coming in and sort of with a greenfield investment and trying to compete with these guys is going to be a huge challenge. There's other industries like technology software where there's very little local competition, and foreign companies face very little resistance to new ideas, new products entering the marketplace. So it's difficult to generalize, but if you are faced with a more traditional industry with strong local competitors, there's a number of things that they can do to trip you up. One of them certainly would be to bring a level of enforcement, a disproportionate level of enforcement upon your operation. So, for instance, I've seen companies in traditional consumer packaged goods areas, traditional fields like auto parts or steel, suddenly infringing upon the territory of incumbent players that have been around for a long time, and suddenly they're the products or the equipment that are essential to their operations are being held up at customs for weeks or months at a time. And what's really behind that is pressure coming to bear upon that process by the competition who's using contacts in those regulators to slow things down. So you really have to understand your competitive landscape before you go in.
So is that sort of the way it used to be in Japan, where in certain industries, if you were exporting products to Japan at customs, they would inspect every single product?
Yeah, I think that's a very comparable example, absolutely.
Is any company, any country a particular offender?
Well, generally the smaller the country, the more likely that one or two local player is to be, you know, very powerful and able to wield that much influence. The larger countries, Mexico, Brazil, and the countries that are more, I would say, devoted to the rule of law, such as Chile and Colombia, this is far less likely to happen.
In the smaller countries, is it a question that there are different rules for foreign business so that you can see, or is it more sharks under the water? Things that the local companies do that you really don't see and don't know about?
The code of laws in Latin America are as thick as any region or country in the world. There's no lack of laws. So it's not about what's codified in the laws. It's more about the ability of incumbent companies that feel threatened to exercise influence over the application or enforcement of those laws.
You mentioned getting strong local partners. Anything else a company can do to level the playing field, a foreign company?
Absolutely. You know, one of the interesting dynamics of NAFTA when it was passed was that it ushered in a huge number of mid-sized American companies, many of which had never operated in emerging markets. And they were excited, and they often were following their customers down to Mexico. For instance, auto parts providers from the Midwest were following down General Motors and Ford and wanted to be close to their assembly to service their needs. And so they would set up a factory in northern Mexico. And all of a sudden, within a month or two, the head of electricity or the head of water or the local person collecting land tax would come around, basically with this handout extorting money. And these companies were appalled. They were perhaps a little naive, but they did not expect this, and they sent their complaints through U.S. diplomatic channels, through the embassy in the U.S., which is the largest embassy in the world. And the Americans began to pressure the Mexican government to really forced these companies, or sorry, these regulators to back down in their extortionary practices of American companies.
So weren't they, didn't U.S. companies also face legal sanctions if they gave in to that extortion?
Well, absolutely. What happened was through this diplomatic pressure, you got more of a level playing field in Mexico. On the other side of the border, you have had over the last 15 years, particularly since the Enron scandals, a Department of Justice that increasingly is pursuing the enforcement of corrupt practices through the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. The Enron scandal created this huge enterprise called the Department of Justice with 700 investigators. When that scandal was finished, those regulators needed to work on something else. And so the Department of Justice, which was traditionally a pretty sleepy organization, became much more aggressive. And they have been pursuing corruption cases all over the world in industries like medical equipment, pharmaceutical software, and others.
Let me ask you, if a U.S. or other company goes to its own government and starts invoking such prosecution, isn't that going to piss off your local customers and partners? Is there anything a little less stressful that the company might be able to do to level the playing field? Or less aggressive?
I don't know if it'll upset your customers and or even your partner, but it will upset your competitor. And of course, that can invoke even greater reaction on their part. You really have to look at it on a case by case basis. But certainly the threat, there are certain jurisdictions where the U.S. commercial diplomatic efforts are more influential than others, certainly Mexico, Central America, Caribbean, huge influence, Colombia also. Further south in Argentina, Brazil, the U.S. has less teeth diplomatically to change how things are operating in the government. So you also have to gauge how effective they will be as an ally and how that might stack up against the counter threat of even angrier competitor.
Liz, you've talked about a lot more companies going in, a lot more foreign companies, and local businesses getting stronger. Isn't all that competition putting upward pressure on local prices?
You mean downward pressure on prices?
No, I was thinking of as you have more competitors for resources, for staffing, for land,
oh,
for
absolutely.
Office space,
sure.
For telecom.
You really see it in the very narrow segment of, bilingual managerial talent. And Brazil is probably the most dramatic example of this, where a sort of C-suite personnel of a, let's say, a $500 million operation in Brazil will earn more money than his or her U.S. counterpart or European counterpart. So, yes, definitely in HR circles you see that. In land, certain commercial property environments like Sao Paulo and Rio have really grown. Also Santiago de Chile and a few others have definitely grown more expensive. So yes, there is definitely pressure on those two points.
Let me turn a little bit to manufacturing. U.S. manufacturing has been heavily hit by competition from China. And you mentioned that China is really going after resources. But do manufacturing companies in Latin America face the same kind of challenge from Chinese competition, that cut price?
Absolutely. In fact, in many ways, the Chinese competition facing Latin American companies is fiercer. For instance, the U.S. is very effective at countering Chinese dumping. The U.S. is fairly effective at countering Chinese intellectual property infringements.
That I have to tell you is a matter of some debate that we're going to talk about two episodes from now, but
okay.
Go on.
Okay. In Latin America, they don't have the regulators and enforcement apparatus to pursue that kind of competition the way we do in the United States. So you tend to find more product rip-offs in floating around Latin America. You find a lot more dumped product in Latin America proportionate to the total sales to Latin America.
So how is that going to affect our listeners, the foreign company that's investing in Latin America or wants to export to Latin America?
It's tricky. I mean, I have clients that that have manufacturing facilities in Latin America that are losing market share to Chinese product, which is sometimes legally imported and sometimes illegally imported into those Latin American markets.
What are you telling them to do?
Well, depends on the product category, but in some cases, the best advice is to lobby for a combination of greater enforcement of that if it's a legal product, and for some form of protectionism if it's legal product. In other cases, it is obvious that in the foreseeable future, a place like Brazil is just not going to be a competitive place to manufacture. So you should offshore all but the turning of the last few screws on that product outside of Brazil and, you know, look to lessen your costs that way. So it's a case-by-case basis, but manufacturing, particularly in South America, is less and less competitive.
Okay, and we're about to go to break, and when we get back, as you mentioned, we've been talking about Latin America as if it were a single market, but in reality it's 21 different economies. So we want to take a look at some of the individual countries in Latin America and which ones are the best ones for our listeners to look at. And we're going to break.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network. Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616. Bob Pritchard has over 30 years of experience as a straight-talking business consultant and author working with some of the top Fortune 500 companies. Now he's come to the Voice America Business Channel to help you and your business. Tune in to the Bob Pritchard Radio Show for information about starting and successfully running a profitable business. From the movers and shakers to great marketing screw-ups, you can't afford to miss a single edition of the Bob Pritchard Radio Show, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business. When it comes to business,
you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network. You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Global Reach. We're talking with John Price of America's Marketing Intelligence, and we've been talking about how to succeed in Latin America and what you can do to compete. Now, as we mentioned just before we went to break, mostly we've been talking about Latin America as if it was a single market, and of course it's not. It's 21 different economies, 21 different markets, and more or less 21 different cultures. John, if you, and some are more competitive, some are less competitive, some are more attractive, some less. John, if you were going to advise a company that's considering a new investment in Latin America or a new export initiative, what the top 3 countries they should look at are, which ones would they be?
Sure. Well, if they're exporters looking for growth in Latin America, certainly the market that is going to offer the biggest opportunity for immediate growth is Brazil. They have strong currency. Their middle class is really woken up thanks to greater access to credit and real income growth in that marketplace. And there's just literally millions of households that lack basic amenities, and people are ready to buy those. There are over 100 cities in Brazil with a 250,000 people or more. So it's just a vast urban market. In terms of market access, the ability to penetrate the market relatively painlessly, both from a regulatory standpoint and even from a cultural standpoint, Mexico is certainly number two on the list. And number three would be sort of a tie between Colombia and Peru. Both countries now have free trade agreements with the United States. Both are experiencing very solid growth. Both are committed to free trade and allowing imports to come in. And both of them have rising incomes. So that's how I would lay things out from an export point of view. From an investment point of view, it really is going to vary from industry to industry. You know, if you're in mining, you're going to go where the mining ore is. If you are in manufacturing, you're going to look to the most competitive manufacturing markets that offer some local demand. So you might end up manufacturing in Brazil just because it's such a huge market and you have to be there in order to compete. But if you don't, if you're not encumbered by regulations that forces you to be in a market to enter it, Mexico is still probably the most competitive manufacturing platform in Latin America. Central America is very interesting for a number of labor-intensive goods as well.
So when you say think about offshoring your manufacturing, if you want to be in Argentina or Chile or even Brazil, do you look at offshoring to Mexico, to some of the Central American countries, or are you really talking about offshoring to China?
It's going to depend on the good, but there are definitely some, for instance, automotive component and parts makers in Brazil that now manufacture in Mexico and export back into Brazil through a trade agreement, an auto pact agreement they have there. There are others who do the same from Brazil to Uruguay, Paraguay, and Argentina, which are all cheaper environments. Many of the top wine companies in Chile, which have worked for years to establish footholds in wine markets around the world, now are marketing Argentine wines or are buying Argentine grape production under their own brand because land prices in Argentina are about one-fifth of what they are in Chile. So there's different opportunities for cross-border outsourcing within Latin America that are quite interesting.
You talked about Brazil is probably the number one export market, and the large number of cities. How big is their middle class? Their 15,000 and over demographic.
I believe it is probably around 40 million or 40 to 60 million people that would consume on par with, say, you know, the average Spanish consumer.
That makes it very attractive. Brazil is the one country with a different language, with Portuguese. Do their consumers also have different tastes, different... How would you approach that market?
Sure.
If you're looking consumer goods?
Well, Brazil in many ways, culturally and in terms of product preference, is very American-friendly, actually. In fact, in some ways more so than Argentina, Colombia, or Mexico. So the sort of aspiring middle class, upper middle class in Brazil will prefer to wear American clothing products, is quite open to American car brands, will prefer American sort of electronic gadgetry, et cetera. In places like Argentina and Colombia, there'll probably be more of a preference for European, say, luxury brands or European clothing brands. So Brazil is very American-friendly. Now, within Brazil, of course, you have just many different worlds. The north.
What are some of those?
Sure. The north demographically is very different from the south, both in terms of race, ages. You also have different religions being practiced. So it is a tremendously diverse market within, but certain global brands will resonate throughout the country.
Are they better to be sold as a global brand, or should they, or should you try to get your brand, give the brand more of a local flavor?
Again, it's going to depend, but I would say, by and large, in Latin America, there is a reverse from nationalism preference. They prefer global brands. In Mexico, they call it Malinchismo, which is named after the lover of Hernán Cortés, who helped translate for him as he conquered Mexico, and refers to the preference to foreigners over locals. And it's a widely used term in Mexico, less so in the rest of Latin America. But the same sort of preference and prejudice against their own brands occurs in most of Latin America.
Okay. Some of these countries in the past have had really difficult bouts of hyperinflation, where you almost knock the middle class ability to spend, you know, out of the market. Are these countries now immune from that? Because you could lose your whole market overnight. I remember back the last bout Mexico had, you had middle-class families who suddenly their money was worth nothing.
Sure. I think it's fair to say that in certain markets, especially Brazil, Mexico, Chile, Colombia, Peru, there are enough elements in place that are going to protect the currency. And the currency in all those countries is either fully floated or a managed float. So there's the ability to absorb external shocks, and you don't have a case of a few people in the Ministry of the Finance trying to outsmart global bond markets. In places like Venezuela, Argentina, you do have a control economy where central government political control over currency and monetary policy to a degree where there is the present risk of a strong devaluation hitting at any point in time. And it's not these are not economies backed up by strong reserves. These are not economies backed up by strong local savings. So there is a risk of capital flight in some countries. But in most of the region, there's a much smarter macroeconomic management than there was in the past.
Jim, we've got an email question from a listener.
Mm-hmm.
Mark from Boston is asking, how do I compare the risk of two or three very unique markets like Turkey, Indonesia, and Brazil? How would you answer him?
Sure. And you know, although I've worked most of my career in Latin America, inevitably our clients need to go back to their boards and justify an investment in, say, Brazil versus not just somewhere else in Latin America, but very different markets around the world. There are certain basic precepts that you must measure, whether it's risk, political risk, regulatory risk, currency risk, that are going to apply universally across all markets. There are certain metrics that define your opportunity, whether it's growth or size of market. There are certain market research variables like the acceptance of brands, the awareness of brands. And what we typically do is set up a benchmark analysis comparing these metrics across different countries and finding those that compare favorably. And so it's a matter of whittling down. For a lot of companies, the most difficult decisions today come out of the fact that they can look at 200 markets around the world as potential sources of growth, and they don't know where to focus all their energies. And they need to focus, because if they spread themselves too thin, it's inevitable that they'll fail. So this is a fundamental question facing all companies, and there are lots of models out there, but they come down to really comparing some basic metrics that drive their business.
John, we've got about a minute to break, but briefly, some countries like the U.S. are data rich, but a lot of the emerging markets, data is pretty scarce on the ground. How do you get that data?
Well, there's two things. One is you have to recognize that you're not going to get all that data. You're not going to come close to getting the level of information you're accustomed to working with in the United States. So you have to, whatever model you're using to make your business decisions upon, you have to dumb it down to a point where the information gathering is not too onerous. And then you have to be prepared to spend more time and more money to use what they call primary sources, which is going out and speaking to people in the industries, speaking to consumers about about their choice and not relying upon published reports.
Which is a lot of what we've been doing for the past 20 years. We've really got about 10 seconds to break, so it's not time to start a new topic. But when we get back, what we really want to do is look at some suggestions, some tips, techniques, and best practices for competing in international markets. So let's go to break now, and we'll resume in about 2 minutes.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now. Toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network. Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
We're back from break. Thanks for listening to Global Reach. John, let's talk about now some of the ways our listeners can cope with business risk in Latin America and other emerging markets and how they compete successfully. You started talking about comparing unique markets, but what are the first 3 steps that our listeners should take when they want to create a strategy for entering a Latin American market or any emerging market for that matter?
Well, the first thing is to clearly define your objectives. So many people end up entering markets because the CEO comes from a lunch where he or she heard about some new hot market and says, we've got to be in Kazakhstan or we have to be in Brazil, and doesn't really go through the process of defining what they want to get out of that market entry. Because just getting into a market is both costly and can lead to losses for a sustained period of time before becoming profitable. So you really have to define what it is you want to get out of market entry. The other thing to do is to be as focused as possible. So, you know, forget about entering Latin America and decide upon entering one market or another. Once you're in Brazil, you'll soon start to find distributors coming to you from Argentina and Paraguay and Uruguay and Chile and others. There's a certain organic element that happens once you're in the marketplace. And the third is to really spend the time to find good partners, because those people who've been operating those countries for years are really going to make or break your business success.
So when is it smart to partner with a local company versus going it alone if you're investing in an emerging market?
Sure. If you are looking at exporting to the region, you're going to have to, you could set up your own sales offices, but generally you want to start by finding the right importer distributor. And the first mistake a lot of companies make is they look to finding only one national representative. But in markets like Colombia, Mexico, and Brazil, these are vast and varied markets, and rarely will you find one company with true national coverage. So a lot of the times you actually need three or four partners locally to penetrate the market adequately. The other thing is, to when you're looking at investing and actually building a factory or warehousing or what have you on the ground, you really have to understand what it is you're going to get out of the partner, because a lot of partners will come to you with a very vague sense of goodwill that they're going to bring. They'll tell you they have contacts in government, etc. And to really understand how important that is, you need to do your due diligence on them and talk to other companies in your space who have entered the market with or without partners to really put a value on what that partnership's worth.
If you pick a partner in Brazil, in Argentina, and I realize, again, we're talking about 21 countries here. In some countries, for example, in Kuwait or Bahrain, once you've got a distributor, you may be stuck with them for years. It's very hard to divorce. Do you have that kind of consideration in the most attractive Latin America markets?
There are, in some jurisdictions, laws that whereby a distributor, which you thought to be a arm's length relationship, is actually classified as a recruitment or a employment contract, and therefore becomes very difficult to reverse. And so, yes, you need to do your legal due diligence ahead of time to understand how distributor or representative agreements are treated by local law.
Jim, we have an email from Rosemary in Cincinnati, and I think you started to answer this, but she asks, how do I find the right partner for market entry into Mexico or even Thailand? So you started to answer this, but can you go into some more depth?
Sure. I like to think of partnering as a sort of a very thorough dating game. So the first thing you want to do is understand and define what it is you want out of your partner. Do you want them to be strong at sales? Do you want them to have good government relations? Do you want them to be financially strong? Do you want them to be dominant in a particular region of the country, etc.? Then you need to cast a wide net and consider as many candidates as possible and whittle down those candidates until you get to a short list that meets those objectives. Then you need to get on a plane and meet these people and really see if there's a chemistry, a relationship that can be built between you, the manufacturer, and them, the local distributor, or you, the investor, and them, the co-investor. Because as much as they make sense on paper, if there isn't chemistry, the first sign of trouble is going to be difficult to negotiate out of. So once you find someone who works on paper and you have chemistry with, you then do a due diligence to see if there's any cobwebs in the closet, so to speak. And once you get through that process, you can feel pretty comfortable about that you found the right partner. But that whole process can take 2 to 3 months.
Now, what's the best source to find out if there are those cobwebs? Well, I like to call them alligators swimming under the water.
Sure. Some of it is in public domain, but much of it is reputational and really can only be found by interviewing that company or that person's peers, their competitors, associations they work with, customers that they work with, suppliers they work with.
Well, John, this has been really great. Any last words for about a minute on advice to our listeners about what they can do to enter a Latin American market successfully?
Well, I think the entering Latin America is the same as entering any emerging market. Take your time, study it thoroughly, take the time to build great relationships locally, but also question everything you hear and do your due diligence. If you're cautious and you connect with the right people, you will succeed.
And work with a company that's done a lot of work with Latin America or the emerging market that you've been looking at. John, thank you so much. This has been terrific, and I really appreciate it, and I'm sure our listeners will too. Next week, we're going to have Roy Stephenson on the show. He's the head of strategic planning and marketing based in London. Roy advises banking and payment card clients around the world. He identifies and advises them on best practices in customer marketing, customer loyalty, and relationship management. So we're going to talk about the imminent demise of the plastic credit card and do a special segment on his recent article, Honey, I Shrank the Bank. It's looking at the ways banks are shedding branches and shedding businesses and how that's going to affect your international business. The week after, we're going to talk about China's undeclared trade war against the U.S. and why the U.S. is practicing unilateral disarmament. Our guest is going to be trade lawyer Roger Chagrin, who's based in Washington. And it should be a very exciting show because I think we're going to have a couple more guests as well. So I want to thank you for listening to this first inaugural session of Global Reach, and I hope that you're going to tune in next week to find out how you can extend your global reach.
Thank you for listening to Global Reach with Tay Revez. Please join us again next Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.